Hey, this is Meredith. Have you ever thought about what your life would be like if you gave God an unqualified yes? No matter what he asked of you, you'd say yes, no reservations. I've been thinking about that a lot this week, and it's all because of the story that you're about to hear from Lana Vasquez. Thank you, by the way, for enjoying these archive episodes that we've shared this summer as we've taken a few weeks off. We're going to be back next week launching our next 10 episodes, and they are so good. In this next season, we've got stories from Blessing Offer, from Paul and Hannah McClure, and Terry Wildman, the writer of the First Nations version of the New Testament. Incredible stories, inspiring God stories, and they'll kick off next week. But for now, we're going to cap off our archive episodes this summer with part two of Lana Vasquez's story. Page 94 of The Unfolding is the story of Lana Vasquez.
I just said to God, I'm doing everything you asked me to do. You asked me to rescue children. I don't know what else to do. I just said this. Something has got to give.
God's story has been unfolding.
Since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in The Unfolding.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. When God asks us to do the impossible, and we're willing to say yes, regardless, we are in the perfect position to experience the miraculous. When Lana Vasquez met Jesus at 19, she knew she'd been rescued from death. And she felt compelled to rescue others. If you haven't heard it, check out part one of Lana's story in page 93 of The Unfolding. Within a few short years, she was a full-time missionary rescuing kids from trafficking in Thailand. It was a daunting mission, a need far beyond what she could do in her own strength. In fact, it seemed impossible.
I only committed 2 months to Thailand, actually. There was a series of events of confirmation. I didn't know I was called to ministry. I didn't know I was called to missions. I didn't know any of this. I just knew I wanted to rescue children and people the same way that God rescued me. Another big part of my story is right before I stepped foot into that church and had an encounter with Jesus, I actually was getting out of a controlling, abusive relationship. And I remember just not knowing a way out. I felt so stuck. Everything was a mess, my body, my soul, my heart, everything. And I just wrote a suicide note to God. And I basically said, God, you know, if you're such a good God, then why am I living a life of hell? And shortly after I came to know the Lord, I think 6 months later, and he rescued my life. So I know I was rescued from death, from hell, you know, from all of it. And so I knew I wanted to do that, but I didn't know the details of that. I didn't know what that looked like. So one major thing is, I knew I was rescued to rescue, and different confirmations and different things when I was praying, Kate, because I didn't know I was called to ministry. I didn't know I was called to missions. I didn't know what that was. Coming into the church as a 19-year-old unchurched girl, I didn't know what those talks were. I didn't know what those words meant. Like, little by little, God started revealing to me more and more, piece by piece. So I finally, through a series of events, knew I wanted to, I narrowed it down. I wanted to work with exploited children. So I had heard a missionary come from Sao Paulo, Brazil, and he talked about the 300,000 street kids in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And he said that the police just line them up and massacre them. And see 5-year-olds sniffing glue. They're just a problem that won't go away. They keep multiplying. And there's more kids in the streets than there is food in the dumpsters. And so basically, like, the kids would even boil cardboard. And they just did it to kill their hunger pains. And they could, you'll see them sniffing glue, just even 5-year-olds sniffing glue, because glue is cheaper than food. And I just remember crying and weeping. And the pastor came over to me, like, during the Sunday school time and said, Lana, what do you want to do for the Lord? And out of my heart and just out of my spirit said, I want to work with exploited children internationally. And my aunt looked at me and she said, you do? And I said, I guess it's what came out of my mouth. That's what I said, you know? And you have, granted, I'm 22, I think, at the time, 22 and a half. And it's in between my first and second year of Bible school. I don't know anybody. I don't know any missionaries. I don't know how to get to, you know, I don't know anything. So missionary, I thought, I'm going to go work. I'm going to go live in Brazil. I'm going to work after Bible school. I'm going to go live with this missionary and help them. They work with the street kids. They have a street kids home. I'm going to go help them help the street kids of Brazil. So in all of that, I set my face to do that at 23 and a half. And that's what I told everybody. When I graduate, I'm going to go ahead and do that. And when I was graduating, the Lord spoke. I was in the shower on my graduation day, and the Lord said, stay behind in Tulsa one more year. And I just cried. And I said, no, God, I want to go. Like, no, why are you making me stay in Tulsa, Oklahoma? I mean, send me anywhere. My friends, you're sending them to Russia and Yugoslavia and all these places. And I'm saying, here am I, send me. And you're not sending me. And last time I checked, there's a shortage of laborers in the Bible. And I said, so God, why? I want to go, send me. And I just kept hearing the same thing. Stay behind in Tulsa one more year. Long story short, the reason why the Lord had me do that, I would then meet some missionaries that would start a rescue home in Thailand that I would go to help them pioneer. The crazy thing is that when I met them and when we went, I only committed 2 months to Thailand because I had my face set to Brazil. They said they're going to pioneer Thailand, Mexico, Africa. Can't remember to this day what the fourth one was, but the fifth one was Brazil. And I said, I will commit to helping you start these rescue homes in all these countries. I'll commit 2 months to every country. But when I get to Brazil, I'm going to live there. I'll be the one to run that home in Brazil. So that was my plan. That's what I knew. 2 months, landed here. I was 24 when I landed. I actually landed April 24th, exactly 20 years ago. And I knew nothing, right? Still know very little. And started, we had 52 kids, one cook, one house mother, and one interpreter that spoke like 20% English. But my first week, I got deathly ill, lost 10 pounds in 1 month. Oof. Found myself laying on a hospital bed with a dirt floor with a mangy dog coming in while they're giving me a shot of I don't know what, I don't know where. And I was just like, I hate this, you know, and 24 years old in the middle of a rice paddy village where we only had 7-Eleven, and all that I could eat that I knew that was edible was banana bread and orange juice. So lived off banana bread and orange juice my first year. Wow. Had we call it a miracle moped for 52 kids. You could run faster than it. Yeah. We would stop at stoplights for a crocodile crossing, big snake pipe. On this little moped, right? It was so funny. And then we would have to get groceries. It was technically an hour away where they had a big grocery store with a KFC. But on our miracle moped, it'd take us 2 hours. So we'd go 2 hours on our miracle moped to KFC once a month. Anyways, it was the hardest time of my life, but it was it just created so much resolve in me. And what happened was my Corinne daughter, she was the first face I saw, and she came up to me and she said, I don't have a mom and you don't have a daughter. From this day forth, you're my mom and I'm your daughter. And she's been my daughter ever since. And from that, I just knew I couldn't leave these kids. And they called me, the missionaries I went with, 2 months turned into 6 months. And they said, Lana, can you please be the children's home director? The girl that was going to do it, she doesn't think she could do it. So can you please be the children's home director? So I committed then, okay, I'll be the children's home director for a year. I'll give you a year. Well, that all turned into a year and a half over. The missionaries that we went with was going to close the homes for funding purposes, was going to close all the homes. And I said, we can't do that to these kids. Will you pray about handing them over to me? And so at 25 and a half years old, I became not just mama to 52 kids, but I became founder of an organization and a ministry as a single young missionary girl with very little ministry and church experience. I would say that those were some of the hardest days of my life, but yet at the same time, just made me with a resolve and a resilience that has kept me here on the mission field for 20 years.
There is a story, the story about how you ended up getting all this land.
Yes.
Can you tell that story?
Yes, absolutely. That's one of my favorites, actually, still to this day. it was a time, it was a really hard time for us here. We had just moved to the border because at that time we had heard that 60 women and children daily were being trafficked on our border. Our border, the destination is Bangkok, which is known as the armpit of the world for children involved in prostitution. And so when we had come here, we were doing work around here, but when we'd come here, we would find out that there was no safe home. There was no Christian safe home. There were no children's homes at that time. Nobody was doing anything about these children that were being trafficked and sold on our border. That's why we moved here. We were doing as much as we can with it. We rescued our first 8-year-old girl for $24. She was, and from there, World Vision actually said, if you start a home, everyone's scared. The border control, the police, the government, they're scared of the border control. They're scared of the police. They're scared of the government. But it, because these children are Burmese that are being trafficked over, they're not Thai children. We're in Thailand. So they're technically illegal. And so they said, everyone's scared. Nobody will do anything. And I said, well, what if I do something? Because I literally heard God say, you do it. You do something. And I said, what if I do something? And they said, if you do something, we'll get you 12 children tomorrow that would have been trafficked. And so I said, do it. Get me the children. We're starting a home. So that's how we started. So when we started, boom, it just exploded because there was nowhere to send these trafficked children. So everyone was calling us and sending them to us, the local clinics, the hospital, all of them. They were calling us and sending World Vision themselves. Everybody was calling us and sending children to us. At that time, babies were a hot commodity. Babies were being sold on our border for $18, 500 baht. There was different reasons they were using them. And so basically they were just a hot commodity and we were rescuing babies left and right. Once you rescue a baby, you have to have the Pampers, you have to have the formula. We have to have a caregiver for these babies because a lot of them are either abandoned at the clinic and that's how the traffickers get them. And so that's why the clinic was calling us and they're abandoned because something's wrong with them or, you know, there's shame or something's happened. And so with all of that, we have so much medical, you need a one-on-one caregiver so that baby can bond. So a rescued baby would cost $300 a month. Well, we were struggling. We were rescuing so fast that we couldn't even feed the kids we had. And I knew that there's no way I could take in babies when I can't even feed the ones I have. That's just irresponsible. Okay. It was to the point where I was cringing when the phone would ring because I knew it was a call for a baby. And so the clinic called me and just said, hey, we have this baby. And I said, look, I can't feed the kids I have. Can you please send the baby somewhere else? And I said, I hate to say that. I want this baby, but I can't feed them. And they said, Lana, there's nowhere else. Nobody else will take babies. And I said, well, what happens if I don't take this baby? And they said, you have 72 hours. If you don't get this baby, they said, there's so many people coming in and out. It's a free clinic. If there's so many people coming in and out that there's no way for us to watch and monitor this baby. If you don't get this baby within the next 72 hours, this baby will end up in the hands of a trafficker. And so that pressure, that immense pressure was just weighing on me so strongly. And it was just a hard time. And I just remember looking at my air conditioning unit and saying, I can sell it. And at that time, I think I could get $500 for it. And at that time, it was like 6 months of rice. Well, if you know how hot Thailand is, mm-hmm. if you're going to sell your air conditioning unit in tropical heat weather, you are the most desperate in the world, honestly. Mm-hmm. And so that's the point. I said, okay, I'll sell my aircon unit when we get back. And that's how we'll survive. Well, around the same time, my children's home director now, who has been in my life since she was 10, was graduating from Bible school. And she said, can you please come? You've been a part of my life. And I feel like you need to be here. And plus, she was coming back to help me in Thailand. So I had to make sure that I would get her on a plane and she wouldn't get snatched away from a young single guy. So I had to put her on a plane because I had some work for her to do over here in Thailand with me. She had to raise my baby. So I spent the last money that I had in my personal bank account to get down to Tulsa, Oklahoma, wipe my bank account clean. And it was like $1,000 emergency fund. And so spent the last money, got there. ended up staying with some friends and that I hadn't seen in 10 years. And so I'm at the table, I'm stressed, I'm jet lagged, I'm tired, I'm worried. What am I going to do when I get back? How am I going to feed the kids when I get back? Just all these stuff, just carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders, honestly. And we sit down for a beautiful dinner and her husband is a businessman. And he said, Lana, what's your $1 million God dream? And I remember thinking, you American, my $1 million God dream, you guys think so big. I said, I just need to keep babies from dying. Like, I just need to keep babies out of hands of traffickers. My $1 million God dream. I just need rice to feed my babies. And it was so funny because I, thank God I didn't say it. They're some of my best friends and they're my board members. And I tell this story and he laughs, and so he knows. So I won't get in trouble. But and I remember thinking it, and but out of my mouth saying, thank God, I said from what came out of my heart, not what came out of my head, but what came out of my heart was, I need land to build my vision because my vision is too big to rent. I want to be able to rescue children and not worry about how we're going to feed them and not worry about what we're going to do and be able just to freely rescue children. And I said, I need land and I need buildings. I want to do family-style safe homes. I don't want to put 25 kids in a room. I want to do family-style. I want them to see what it's like to have a mother that doesn't sell them and a father that doesn't sneak into their room at night, to see what a loving marriage is and not an abusive situation, to see what a healthy family unit looks like. I said that this is what I want. I want complete and total healing for these kids. And I want family style safe homes on a land, on a piece of land. And I don't want them in a concrete jungle anymore. And my friend looked at me and he said, well, Lana, I know a little bit about land. Let's look at it all. So he starts to pull the dream more and more out of my heart. And we lay out this beautiful piece of property with family style safe homes. And he said, he looked at it and he said, you need about $500,000. And I looked at him and I said, $500,000. And I just remember in my head, I just need $500. I just need $1,000 for rice. Like, you know, I just $500,000. And so I excused myself from the table and I was walking up the stairs and I started grumbling. I said, $500,000. I just need rice for my babies. You American, $500,000. And I just turned around from the stairs and just told my friends, hey, can you just let me sleep in tomorrow? I'm jet lagged. I'm tired. I'm a little stressed about some stuff. Can you just let me sleep in and not wake me up in the morning? And they're like, sure, sure. Just go ahead and go to bed. And I'm just mulling and grumbling, $500,000. So I go to bed that night and I just remember looking up and just feeling like at the end and just not knowing what I'm going to do and not knowing what I'm going to do when I get back. And also we wanted to rescue those babies. You know, I didn't know what we were going to do or how we can do that and how feeling like that's not responsible of me and just the pressure, you know, mm-hmm. and trying to figure it all out. And, you know, I just said to God, like, I'm doing everything you asked me to do. You asked me to rescue children. Like, I'm doing everything I know to do. I don't know what else to do. I just said this. I just remember these exact words. Something has got to give.
Lana had followed God to the other side of the world. She was doing her best to rescue the most vulnerable, but she was facing a mountain too big to move. Part two of her story is coming up, but first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute. Habib, I've heard you say you get what you pay for. You say that's true in business, but it's also true in your family. How does that work out?
Well, in business, a lot of times companies want to make more profit. So they start rewarding certain things and you reward behaviors that get you more profit in the short term. But in the long term, that may not really yield good increase in sales or growth because they are just maximizing current profit but not working for the future. That's the same thing with people. Whether it's our children, whether it's our friends, whether it's anybody, when we dwell on their faults and we want to correct them to help them grow, sure, we'll help them grow. But if we dwell on what they do great, it may be only like three things they do great and a bunch of other things. They leave their room messy, they, you know, slouch, they don't say thank you and all that stuff. But if we dwell on the few things that they do great, two things will happen. Number one, they start looking at us with admiration that we support them and we advocate for them. And number two, you gain the right to to down the road kindly help them in the stuff that they need help with. Hmm. So you get what you pay for. If you just want to nitpick on your friends and children, it's your right. But I think you get more with honey than with vinegar. And if you just brag on their good qualities, they'll give you more of that.
People can learn more about that
at HabibHabib.com.
And now part two of Lana Vasquez's story.
I just remember tear going down the side of my face, and I'm a tough girl, you know, like, but it was one of those breaking moments, you know, where it was just like, I came to the end and I didn't know what we were going to do. And so that next morning I woke up to my friend shaking the bed and said, and she's crying over me and screaming over me, Lana, get up, get up. They're going to build you your homes. They're going to get you your land. Get up, get up. Aaron got you a meeting with his boss. He's the number one custom home builder in Tulsa, Oklahoma. They've been looking for an orphanage to support. They're going to get you your land. They're going to build you your home. Get up. And as I started to sit up, I literally heard the audible voice of the Lord. And he said, and I did it all while you were sleeping. I didn't need you to figure it out. I didn't need you to worry it out. I didn't need you to stress about it. I don't need you to figure out how you're going to feed my children, how you're going to rescue my children, how you're going to take care of my ministry, how you're going to do my will on the earth. I don't need you to figure it out. He said, all I need you to do is trust and obey. Lana, can you do those two things? Can you trust and can you obey? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, okay, then. And it's actually, I say this, and it's the passage in Psalms 127, verses 1-3. And it says, it's vain for you to rise up early, to go to bed late, to eat the bread of anxious toil, for so he gives to his beloved even while they sleep. And so what I tell everybody is he did it all while I was sleeping. I would go on and get ready and go to that meeting with the businessmen. I was very scared. They asked me questions that a little girl does not know. I didn't know anything at that time, you know, like they were investors. So they wanted to ask these questions. And finally, one of the businessmen just said to me, he said, you know, I deal with sales, so I deal with a lot of fake people. And he said, and everybody asked me for money. He said, but when I saw your video, when I saw how those children, how they ran into your lap and the love you have for them, he said, that was the most genuine thing I've seen in my life. Please come by my office. I have a check ready for you. And the other businessman said, actually, I was in the shower this morning and the Lord reminded me that I'm going to have to pay taxes unless I donate. And I'm supposed to give $50,000 to a children's home for land. And so I already have a check of $50,000. When I heard about you, I knew you were the one that we were supposed to give it to. And the Lord already told me. So on your way to the airport, can you please pick up a check for $50,000? Oh. Another person gave us $10,000. The other guy gave us $5,000. I went to Tulsa with nothing. And I was on the airplane and left with $65,000. But the thing is, it was all designated for land. So I remember I had mixed emotions. I was on the plane and I said, God, I'm very thankful for this $65,000, but I still need rice when I land. And to this day, I still can't remember how we got rice. And we found a property. It's called the Promised Land. Actually, those same businessmen would fly over and would pick it out and say that they'd never experienced. They knew that when we stepped foot on the land, that that was our land. And he said he's never, ever experienced that. And he's been doing land for 30 years. Actually, that property was owned by the Thai Burmese Chinese mafia. I had three mafia bosses in my living room, and it was supposed to be a gambling brothel casino resort. I have the drawing that they did. And they had a falling out, and then they realized they couldn't. There was a highway that came in, and that land fell on the wrong side of the highway that would separate Thailand and Burma. So legally, they couldn't do that anymore. And so they had to do a quick sale. And so the mafia bosses sold the property to me in my living room. And I remember saying, can you lower it? It's for the children. It's for the children. Can you lower it? And they said, little girl, one tree on that property costs more than one of these payments that you're making. No. And if you stop, we don't need the money. If you stop, keep asking us, we're not going to sell it anymore. I said, okay, just sign right there, please. Just sign right there. And they sign. And we say it like this. We say that God got it out of their hands. and into ours to do the exact opposite of what the plans were, to destroy children's lives. And now we're bringing hope. And we named it the Promised Land because God promised me. He said, your trees will bear fruit in season. Your rain will come in season. And upon this land, you shall have no lack. That we would never, ever lack again for rice and for milk the way we did there. That we would eventually be self-sustaining. And I would be able to rescue children and not worry about how we were going to feed them. And now we're in our self-sustaining projects to try to be able to just live off the land and live off the Promised Land, just so that we can rescue children. And now we don't just have one property, but we have girls and babies, toddlers, Promised Land. And we acquired a boys' Promised Land. So we have 25 acres of the original one, another 17 acres for the boys' Promised Land. And we just built our 25th family style safe home.
My gosh. And all of this has happened in 24 years or less.
20 years. Actually, all of that happened in, we've been on this border. I spent 6 years before in prevention work and with a prevention children's home. And so we've been on the border for 13 years. So it is all of this in 13 years.
Unbelievable. What an incredible turn of events. But it all goes back to, I mean, that call that you initially heard God saying, you know, that you were rescued to rescue, but you have been willing to step out and trust in circumstances that would shut many people down, that would just, you know, just in looking at the practical, many would say, there's no way. But just to hear the stories of how God's provided, I know that has to have been fuel for you when you go back and remember those stories, just like when we remember the stories in the Bible, it fuels our faith to believe that He can handle whatever it is that's in front of us.
It does. It really does. And that's what people say, you've told this story 100 times. And I said, no, we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony, you know. And just my testimony is that He has been so faithful to me, you know, and so faithful to us. And my testimony is the faithfulness of God. For me, I just hope like that my life would just spark hope in people's lives, that if He could do it for me, He'll do it for you, you know, because I was just a little 24-year-old girl that knew nothing. And I'm still a 44-year-old girl that still doesn't know much, you know, but just every day gives Jesus my yes. And He just does great things with it Himself, you know, and He's just been faithful to that. Mm-hmm. And so if people could see that, and if hope and faith for their dreams, how impossible, how big, how crazy they seem, if just hope and faith can arise in their hearts, and that just their dream can come to life by seeing the fulfillment of our dreams over here, that's the prayer of my heart.
So way back at the beginning, you really felt called to Brazil, but now you've spent 20 years in Thailand. Did you feel like maybe you just missed it and that wasn't where you were called to be?
I always thought I would go to Brazil. 2 months turned into 6 months. 6 months turned into a year and a half. A year and a half turned into 20 years in Thailand that I never signed up for, that I never said, I never said yes to Thailand. I just said yes to Jesus and whatever He wanted me to do. And basically these past 20 years, I've just been saying yes. And my yes was that He wants me here. And I say it this way, I've been faithful with what was in my hands, Thailand and Burma, all the while holding Brazil in my heart. God never forgot about Brazil. And I laid Brazil down on the altar. I remember signing the papers to be the chairperson of Life Impact Thailand Foundation. And that means I have to live in this country and be in this country. And I said, God, I guess that this, you know, you just used Brazil to get me here. And I said, I lay my Isaac on the altar. And I just signed my name on that paper. And 2 weeks later, my pastor friends that I knew at Bible school 20 years ago said, wherever you're at in the world, we will fly you to Brazil. Brazil needs Life Impact. The children of Brazil are calling. The children of Brazil need you. So fast forward to now, we eventually got to Brazil and we have started Life Impact Brazil full force, full throttle. And we're in the favelas of Brazil and we're in the north, the most destitute and desperate places. And we have four full-on projects up and running. We have 12 full-time staff, and we have a full-on launched project. And so I just say it like this: be faithful with what God puts in your hands, and He will give you what's in your heart.
After I talked with Lana, I just kept thinking, what would my life look like if I gave an unqualified yes to Jesus? What would yours look like? We talked about how we could be praying for the ministry, the work Life Impact International is doing, rescuing kids, helping them heal. That's hard. And now there is another layer of challenge for that work. Burma is on the verge of civil war, airstrikes, danger every day. Lana asked if we would pray for peace for Burma, for protection for innocent people caught in the crossfire. I was struck by something that she said. She said, you know, we're doing the will of God. We are exactly where He has asked us to be, doing exactly what He has asked us to do. So we know that if we were to die tomorrow, we've got peace and confidence that we are here for such a time as this. And she's an amazing woman. If you'd like to learn more, head over to lifeimpactintl.org. Thanks to Lana for sharing her story. Thanks also to the folks who make the unfolding happen. Producer Jason Rackow, Daniel Perez, and Jen Brisky, who help out with web stuff. And our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. Find out how to unleash the full power of your leadership potential at HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page in The Unfolding.
Hello, I'm Nicole Phillips, host of the Kindness Podcast. The whole point of the podcast is to add value to your life. Value in the form of kindness stories and tips, like this one from Danny Gokey.
These are check engine lights, right? Not being kind, not being patient. I think those check engine lights need to be indicators for us to say, hey, there's something lacking on the inside of me.
Other guests this season include Max Licato and Crystal Evans-Hurst. Check out the Kindness Podcast wherever you find your favorite shows.